This is the course which is called Journey of a Soul. And it is going to be taking us through the journey our souls are taking when they come here into this world, when they live here in our bodies, and when they depart from our bodies as well. And I want to thank our sponsor. The sponsor of this course is Saul Levinson. Saul Levinson is a funeral home here in the community. It's the only Jewish funeral home in our area. And I have to tell you that their sponsorship is not coincidental. This course is extremely helpful for those that are mourning the loss of their loved ones or have experienced a loss recently or sometime that is still impacting them. And we know that all of these topics that we are going to be discussing with you are going to be extremely helpful for all of those who are grieving. And for all of us who are, thank God, not living through these feelings, it's going to be very helpful for us and very interesting as well. So that's why I want to begin with a question which is rather obvious. What feelings does death evoke in you? Some of you might look at it as a kind of a rhetorical question, because you'll tell me it's kind of obvious, and I will tell you that it is not necessarily so simple. Different people actually have different feelings associated with the loss of a loved one. People have feelings of fear, and that's quite understandable. People have a feeling of mystery. We don't know what is awaiting for us after we depart from this world. Sometimes these feelings are paralyzing. Sometimes these feelings make us emotionally numb. And we are going to address all of this. And in this course, there are really three areas that we are going to address, which are associated with this topic. We are going to be addressing the philosophical side of it. In other words, we are going to be talking about the ideas that are helpful. We are also going to be talking about the emotions. And then we are also going to be talking about the practical side. And the practical side, I believe, is the most important. And this is because I hope that when we will be done with this course of lectures, you all will be able to look at yourself and at your life a little bit differently, and it's going to enrich your life. And I have to commend every single one of you for being here. And I have to tell you that you are all extremely brave for joining us today. And this is because throughout the time of preparation for this course, when I was talking to people about it, I saw that so many people, on one hand, were intrigued, but on the other hand, scared to talk about all this. And this is not an easy topic to address. Many people are scared to read books about it, hear about it. But I believe that what we will hear today is actually going to help us cope with these fears. And that's why I am really commending you for joining us here. So there are two approaches that we can find to the issue of death and dying in the world around us. First one is quite familiar to you. The Western civilization very often is scared of the very concept of death. And this is exactly what I was addressing in what I was saying a minute ago. A lot of times people are just not willing to think about it. People block it away. By the way, when I talk to parents of children that need to speak to their kids about a loss of a loved one, sometimes it's a grandfather or grandmother who passed away, and they need to tell their son or daughter that our beloved grandma is gone, grandpa is no longer here. I speak with them, helping them, coaching them how to address it. Very often, parents tell me that my son or my daughter didn't even understand what happened. They didn't relate to it, or they had some such a strange reaction. I told them that grandpa passed away and they said, okay, and went back to play with their toys. How is it possible? And I always tell them that they went back to play with their toys, not because they did not understand what you said, but because they understood way too well what you said. Not because they did not relate to what happened, because they did relate to what happened. And it is just too painful for them to face it. And this is why they went back to play with their toys. It is too hard for them to delve in it. And that's why they're just blocking it away. And in the Western civilization that we are growing up in, that we are living in, that we are dealing with throughout our lives, it is very, very common. Not only among children, among adults. Adults block it away. Whenever I give my classes, those of you that have been listening to my classes before, I'm sure know that I always say that we bring examples from children just because it's easier for us adults to look at them and to study them. But really, whatever I say about children is referring to us adults as well. It's just easier for us adults to look at them and then bring it to ourselves. So this is one approach. And then there's another approach, which we just by virtue of the society we are living in, our surroundings, we are familiar with this approach much less, but I do need to mention it. Throughout the centuries, the Muslim culture has been teaching people to have a completely different view on death. In their religion and in their culture, death is something that you should be rejoicing about. And as a matter of fact, when I was studying in yeshiva, I saw many Sephardic rabbis that were writing about the fact that in the society that they are living in, the non-Jewish society, which was a Muslim, or Arabic society, or sometimes Persian society, they saw that people were actually prohibited from mourning and they were prohibited from expressing any grief because in their religion, when a soul is departing from this world, it is an act of liberation. And that's why they should be rejoicing at that moment as their religion is instructing them. So these are two opposite approaches. One is modern Western approach. One is Muslim Middle Eastern approach. So I want to ask you a question. Where does Judaism stand in all this? What is the Jewish approach? And we are going to look at it right now. We are going to try to answer this question during today's class. For us, death is scary because it is the end of who I am. This is me. I'm looking at myself. I know how I look. I know how my voice sounds. I have certain understanding of who I am. And then I will have one moment when everything I know about myself is going to be no more. It's going to be gone. This is scary. And I have to tell you, it's scary for me also. I'm being very honest with you. I'm getting chills right now as I'm talking about it. But I want to ask you a question. is my appearance, my voice, my emotions, my thoughts, is this really who I am? Or I could even ask you a better question. Am I my body? Am I my thoughts? Am I my emotions? Am I my memories? What am I? Maybe there is something deeper to all of us than what we can just see. I definitely hope so. But what is it? So we will see now that really I'm not my body. I'm not my knowledge or my intellect or my emotions or my desires. I am my soul. What does it mean? How am I supposed to understand this? You see, when people were created in the Torah, when the first person, Adam, is described how he came about, we see a very interesting detail. You see, the stories of the Torah that are recorded very often read by us as some interesting parable, as some tale, as some story that we can relate to our children. But really, every single detail in the Torah is very precise. And we will see now a fascinating lesson that we could learn from one small detail. It says in the book of Genesis, in the book Bereshit, God formed the human of soil from earth and breathed into his nostrils the soul of life. And then when it's speaking about everything else that was created by God during the 6 days of creation, all it says is God said, let the earth bring forth all kinds of living beings. So what do we see? We see that everything in the world that we see around us has been created in a one-step process. God said, let there be vegetation. Vegetation came about. Let there be planets, and planets were created. Let there be fish, and fish started teeming the oceans. One-step process. A person had a two-step process. First, his body was created, and then his soul was created. So now I understand that because I am comprised of two parts, it is pretty much up to me to decide which part of me do I associate myself with more. It is up to me. How do I look at myself? And we have to right now address the issue of death. What is death? Death, as we know it, is the end of my physical self. And what about my soul? You see, I'll tell you an interesting thing. People often ask me about the eternity of a soul or about death of our bodies. I want to ask you a question. If I will tell you that something dead is going to come alive, are you going to be surprised? You definitely will. You'll be shocked. You'll tell me it's magic. You'll tell me maybe it's impossible. Maybe I'm playing some trick. But if something is dead, it's not going to come alive. Okay, I can understand that. But now I want to ask you a question. If something dead does not come alive, why should something which is alive be able to die? Things which are dead should be dead, and things which are alive should be alive. That's the only way how it makes sense in my mind. A stone is going to be a remaining stone, which is a dead entity for the rest of its existence. And I understand that. So if dead things don't come alive, why should live things die? And the answer is they don't. Things which are alive do not die, just like things which are dead do not come alive. I have two parts of me. My one part is my body, and my other part is my soul. My body is created from inanimate nature, as the Torah tells me, from earth. My body has always been dead, and by itself, on its own, is dead now as well. It cannot be alive. What about my soul? My soul has always been alive. It has been alive before it came into my body. It is alive now, and it will be alive after it leaves my body. My one entity is always alive, and my other entity is always dead. The thing is, though, that when soul comes into my body, it makes my body alive as well, just because soul is alive. It's like a puppet that has a hand of a puppet master in it. A puppet does not become alive because there's a puppet master's hand in it. Everybody understands it. Puppet is dead. It cannot move. But if there is a puppet master who is moving hand inside of him, then it starts moving. My body is that puppet, and there is a soul, which is the puppet master inside. And soul, because it's alive, while it's in the body is becoming alive. So now we understand the reason for the duality of the creation of the human. We were put together from two parts. One has always been dead and will always be dead. The other one has always been alive and will always be alive. While they're uniting, the live entity, which is soul, is making body come alive as well. And now we are looking at a fascinating idea. It is up to me how to look at myself. I could be a purely material being in my own eyes. Why? Just because that's how I identify myself. Or I could be a little bit less material. You see, our identity is in our own hands. I have many different hats that I wear. Yarmulke is only one of them. I am a rabbi. I am a father. I am a brother. I am a neighbor. I am a friend. Now, how do I see myself? Which identity do I see as my primary way of looking at myself? It's really up to me. Sometimes you meet a person, and the person within first 3 minutes of his conversation with you is going to tell you that he is a businessman and he is running a large corporation. Why is he doing that? Because that's how he looks at himself. In his own eyes, that's who he is. And another person who is running as large of a corporation and maybe even a bigger businessman, but he will not feel the need to present himself this way. Why? Because in his mind, he maybe is looking at himself as a husband, a father, a son. Maybe he's identifying himself through one of his hobbies because he's also adventure enthusiast and he loves hiking. And that's how he is going to be identifying himself. For some, their job is just a way of making money. For others, that's their whole life. For some, their family is their whole life and everything else falls by wayside. For some, it's their hobbies. These are all different ways how we identify ourselves. And our identity of our body vis-a-vis our soul is also up to us. It is totally up to us how I am going to be looking at myself while I'm living in this world. There is a story that took place during the arrest of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson. He has been arrested in the Soviet Union in 1927 by GPU. GPU was the predecessor of KGB. And in 1927, these were Stalin's times, they arrested him for teaching the Torah and spreading Judaism in the USSR. And he, during his first interrogation, was not very cooperative. That's an understatement. The interrogator took out a revolver, put it to his head, and he said, "This little toy makes people speak. It opens the mouths of even the mute, the interrogator said. The previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, very calmly responded, "This little toy opens the mouths of those who have only one world and many gods." And when he said many gods, he looked at the portraits of Stalin and Lenin that were hanging on the wall right there. "I have only one god and two worlds. And that's why this toy is not going to be effective." Now, what do we see here? We see here that at first glance, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe was not afraid to die. That's what it looks like. He's saying, "Listen, I believe in the world to come. Even if you'll kill me, doesn't bother me because I will be in the world to come and I'll be fine." But then there is a deeper way of understanding his words. He was not only saying that I know that my soul is going to be living in forever and I'll be fine even if you'll kill my body. No, he was saying, I right now live a life that does not limit me to my body. I do not identify myself through my body. I identify myself through my soul. I have two worlds. I have my physical world and my spiritual world. And that's why, even if you will take away one world from me, it's going to be sad, but it's not going to be the end of it. I will still be alive. And really, how we identify ourselves throughout our lives depends a lot on how we look at others. What do we preoccupy ourselves with? If I preoccupy myself my entire day with taking care of only my body, if I look at others as exclusively physical beings, then I will be tending to looking at myself as a physical being as well. But the more time and the more attention I pay to my spiritual needs, whichever way I may be defining them, and we will not talk about it at this moment, later on we will be able to, the easier it is going to be for me looking at myself as a soul rather than a body. And I have to tell you, it's not all or nothing approach. It's not that I can only look at myself as a body or only as a soul. Most of people do not look at themselves as exclusively physical beings or exclusively spiritual beings. It's, if you want, percentage approach. Some people look at themselves as 50-50. Some people look at themselves as 70-30. Some people look at themselves as 80-20, 90-10, and so on and so forth. So in other words, throughout my life, my way of looking at myself could change, or even maybe throughout my day, my way of looking at myself could change, because I will be preoccupied with taking care of my soul. And at that moment, I'll be looking at myself as just a spiritual being and I'll forget about my body. If anything, for example, that's what Yom Kippur experience is for. That's why we don't eat on Yom Kippur. We want to look at ourselves as souls. So there is a kind of training that I could allow myself to go through to be a little bit more of a soul person rather than a body person. Later on, we are going to be discussing the issues of heaven and hell. But now I just want to give you a little illustration that mentions these concepts that helps us understanding this issue. People ask me about heaven and hell all the time, and I give different answers to different people depending on their, you know, who they are, depending on where they are coming from, their background. Sometimes children ask me, and this is what I answer people sometimes. Up there in heaven, it's all spiritual. There's no physical pleasures or physical values up there. I can promise you, dollars are not going to help anybody up there, and rubles for sure not. So you live here in this world, and you are surrounded by physical pleasures and physical values and all the physical goods that we are all surrounded with. And then, after 120 years, comes time when your soul is moving to the next world. Now, it's very difficult for the soul to adapt there. It's new culture, new environment, new language, new everything. Everything is different. But some people have easier time adapting there than others. If a person was only focusing on physical things down here, then when he comes up there, it's going to be difficult for him to change his approach because he's not used to it. And that's what we call hell. The difficulty of adjusting to spiritual environment. But if a person had more of a spiritual life here, if he was also paying attention to the spiritual values, then up there is going to be easier for him to adjust. People who had a completely spiritual life here will have no difficulty whatsoever. And this is why, by the way, in our tradition, we say that the righteous people live for eternity. They do not die. You will ask me, how is it possible? What does it mean that they're not going to die? Is it just a metaphor? We see funerals of righteous people. People, you know, righteous people die. The answer is righteous people have spent their entire lives dedicating themselves to spiritual matters. They, in their own eyes, were soul beings. And that's why, in their own eyes, when they pass onto the world to come, for them, nothing changes. So we see a phenomenal thing, that the more spiritual things we do here, the less of a loss in our own eyes passing onto the world to come will be. And now I want to show you a short video clip of a song that was comprised about this very issue. There's a popular Jewish band called The Eighth Day. I do have to tell you that the leader of this band, Shmuley Marcus, is also a classmate of mine. So I have to claim some affinity to him. And I'm going to now show you this video clip that's going to allow you to see more.
Why wait to celebrate? Bright lights in city streets.
Eighth Day is a popular Hasidic rock band.
Why wait to celebrate?
One of their hits was inspired by a powerful episode in the life of the second leader of the Hasidic movement, Rabbi Dovber of Meserich.
A student goes to visit a sage, and the sage has nothing in his house. And he says, where's your couches? Where's your chandelier? And he says back to the student, where's all your stuff? You just have a suitcase. And the student responds, but I'm just passing through. And that's when the sage says, aha, I'm just like you. I'm also just passing through.
To his student's assertion, Rabbi Dovber responded with a transformative insight.
That's when he said, I'm just like you, I'm just passing through, just like you. My heart wants to feel something that's real, and my mind hopes to find treasures of another kind. And if you had my eyes, you'd see a palace for you and me.
World is temporary, where people spend most of their life collecting stuff. And the sage tells him, I'm actually just like you. I also collect stuff. It's just not that type of stuff, not leather couches and chandeliers. I collect treasures of another kind.
You know, he stays focused on that higher goal.
Rabbi Dovber taught his students that this world's glitter is a distraction that expires when the journey of corporeality chugs to an abrupt end. Better to invest in treasures of a kind that will benefit the soul in its eternal destination.
I'm just like you. I'm just passing through, just like you. My heart wants to feel something that's real, and my mind treasures of another kind. And if you had my eyes, you'd see a palace for you and me. And my heart wants to feel something that's real, and my mind hopes to find treasures of another kind. And if you had my eyes, you'd see a palace.
So from everything what we have seen just now, it seems like the Torah is really not taking death as such a serious or sad or tragic event. Listen, your soul anyway, and your soul is going to be living forever. And what's the big deal if you pass away? That's what it seems like. Is this really what our sages are telling us we should look at passing away as? It seems very similar to what our Sephardic rabbis were saying they were observing in the Muslim world, where death just seems to be even a reason for celebration. This question becomes even stronger when you read the excerpts from the Torah. If you have your textbooks, then these are texts I'm going to be reading, text number 4 and 5. One of them is an excerpt from Midrash Tanchuma. And this Midrash is actually saying that when God is telling his soul to come down into this world, the soul says, I don't want to. I'm fine here, says the soul. The soul is actually begging God not to being sent down to this world. And then in the text number 5, if you have your textbooks, it says, it brings a quote from Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of Our Fathers. And it says, this world is like a corridor before the world to come. Prepare yourself in the corridor so that you may enter into the palace. A single moment of bliss in the world to come is greater than all of this world. So it seems like the Torah is taking death very lightly. But then on the other hand, we all know that the Jewish law is obligating me to guard my life, and I'm obligated to do everything I can to save someone's life. And the Torah is also telling me that most of commandments are suspended if someone's life is in danger, even if someone's health is in danger. We see Orthodox doctors working to save someone's life on Shabbat, and it happens on a regular basis. The Jewish volunteer group Hatzalah drives its ambulance through our neighborhood on Shabbat if somebody calls it, and these are all observant Orthodox. You could even categorize them as ultra-Orthodox Jews. And then besides for that, we see another passage here, which is text 8 in your textbooks. It says, a single moment of repentance and good deeds in this world is greater than all of the world to come. So one second, I'm confused. Before we said that the world to come is better. Now we are saying that this world is better. You look at me and you'll say, Rabbi, make up your mind, and you will be right. So what is the answer? The answer is that the soul, when it comes down into this world and when it leaves this world, has very conflicting feelings. The soul is enjoying the world to come much more than it would ever be able to enjoy anything in this world. But when the soul sees how much it can do in this world, the time spent with a purpose and not just for enjoyment, the soul is realizing that this world is far greater. And this is why it says that the bliss for the soul is greater in the world to come. But when the soul is able to do good deeds in this world, that's when it realizes the value of being here. And this is why we're going to see now that it says in the Torah, against your will, you are born, and against your will, you will die. The soul does not want to come down here. And the soul, the same soul, does not want to leave this world. Why is it? Because next world has much more pleasure for this world, for this soul, but this world is far more important. And this is the difference between this world and the world to come. So now we understand that really Jewish approach is not the approach of the modern Western civilization, and as well, it's not the approach of the Muslim world. We, on one hand, do not believe that when a person passes away, everything what he has and everything who he is ceasing to exist. We don't believe that for a second. But on the other hand, we recognize how sad and how painful death is. Jewish law actually is obligating people to mourn. It's a mitzvah to mourn onen, a person who is within first day or so after his loved one passed away, before the burial. He is not allowed to perform any mitzvot. He's not allowed to put on tefillin if it's a male. He, you know, a lady would not be able to light, let's say, Shabbat candles. We don't make a bracha, do not make a blessing in this state. It's all because of the grief and the feelings of mourning that a person is experiencing at that moment. Then the seven days of mourning, Shiva, which are observed, we are obligated to mourn. It's a mitzvah to mourn. Why? Because we are feeling this deep sadness for the soul that has departed this world. The soul did not die. The soul is eternal, but it left this world. And that's why we are sad. And now we also understand why, while we experience mourning when somebody passes away, and while we for sure have to do everything we can to prolong our lives, and we are understandably very, very uncomfortable with the idea of dying, but we also understand that we have a way of mitigating these fears for ourselves and for our loved ones. And by the way, I always tell it to the parents that the more they talk to their children about their souls, the easier for these children will be later on understand what happens when a person passes away. I really hope that children will not have to face death of their close relatives, of their loved ones, but they definitely hear in the news, they hear people talking about somebody passing away. They are definitely familiar with this concept, and they will inevitably ask someone, what is it? And the more they understand about their own soul, the easier it's going to be for them to understand it. And the more we focus on our own soul, the easier it will be for us to cope with it. So now let's try to see what have we discovered today. We spoke today about the fear that people have about death and about passing. And we were saying that is a very understandable emotion. We said that on one hand, some cultures are petrified of death. On the other side, some cultures are celebrating death. And where is Judaism standing in all this? And we have discovered that really the Torah is disagreeing with both of them. The life of a person that he is experiencing in this world is allowing his or her soul to do what soul is meant to do its work in this world, to bring godliness, goodness, holiness, spirituality into this world. And this is what soul's purpose is. This is why every soul is on one hand happy to come down here, because it will be able to do its job, to do what it's meant to do. But on the other hand, it doesn't want to go here because it's hard work. It has to depart its home. When a person is passing away, this world is experiencing a great loss, because the soul that was in this world for all these years is not going to be here anymore. It is very painful. It's very sad. And it should be sad. And this is why the Torah is commanding us to grieve and to mourn. But on the other hand, this paralyzing fear of death can be mitigated. And it can be mitigated by how we look at ourselves and how we look at other people. If I throughout my day going to be focusing just a tiny bit more on my spiritual self, it will allow me to be, in my own eyes, a tiny bit more identifying with my soul. This gauge of how much of me is my body and how much of me is my soul is going to be shifting a little bit towards my soul. And this will allow me to alleviate a tiny bit of this fear, because in my own eyes, my loss at the moment when my soul is going to depart this world, hopefully after 120 years old, is going to be tiny, tiny bit less. I really hope that this lesson was useful and helpful. Next class, we are going to be speaking about our relationship with our loved ones who have passed. Can we maintain a real meaningful relationship with our relatives or our friends who are no longer here? How's it possible? What about visiting the graves? What about praying for them? What about looking at their pictures? Can any of this allow us to have real meaningful relationship? Or is it just in our mind? Is it just wishful thinking? Is memory and the feeling of love purely subjective, and it's just living in my own emotional world, but it's not really anything tangible? All of these questions are going to be answered during our next class. For our next class, all of you who want to join us will have to sign up. You could do that on our website, arielcenter.org.